Episode 20, Get a Grip on Lighting, corresponds with tax time. So guess what we did? We brought on Dan Audette from Energy Tax Savers. Oh, yeah. You know what he is? He's a tax engineer. Oh, man, what the heck is that? That sounds scary. Well, last time I checked, the U.S. tax code was super complicated. So not only do you need an accountant, but you need an engineer. The good news is, and this is what Dan was talking about, there's all sorts of little tidbits in there for distributors to help their customers save money, save on taxes, to there's ways that the owners of distribution companies and the owners of contracting companies can get the tax deduction and use it personally should their customer be ineligible. Oh my goodness. So give this episode a run and see what happens. It's tax time. Maybe you're going to get some deductions. Maybe you can help your customers. You can also use it retroactively. Oh yeah. Keystone Technologies. Oh, that was a quick train of thought. Where was the segue, son? Didn't have one, but here's what I'm going to tell you. Smart drive and direct drive compact LED replacements. That's right. Replace those pin CFLs. Smart drive, direct drive. What's the difference? Well, if your customer's being a little bit cheap and they don't want to do an electrical work, but they want to get the energy savings and they don't want to remove that ballast, slam in a smart drive. Goes right on the ballast. System is LED. Or if the customer wants, hey, let's think a little long term on this and get that ballast out of there, run the line voltage right to the socket, you go direct drive. 50,000 hour life, four times the life of a compact, more than four times the life of a compact fluorescent. 50%, over 50% energy savings. Better light distribution if you select the right bulb. They got a whole ton of them on the website. Go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, man. Check out the smart drive and direct dive compact LED replacement. So that's for the CFLs. Just on the left side of the website, click products. You'll find it there. Also, this is the official podcast of WHO, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Visit NAILD.org. nail.org, information on joining the association, educational products. Come on, man. This is where Greg and I learned our thing. Is that nailed? This podcast wouldn't exist without the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. NAILD.org. Episode 20, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Dan.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Say hi to Greg Eric.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for being here.
Dan, what? So this year with tax season, you know, we hear a lot of changes with the whole Trump tax cuts and this sort of thing. And what does a lighting distributor who sells energy efficiency to the end user need to know that's different this year from last year?
So believe it or not, there were a number of exciting things that happened in the tax world recently. You know, most people are probably aware of the giant tax reform bill that went through late last year. There was also a big budget bill passed last month that contained a number of tax provisions that had previously expired. But essentially, these two things came together, and there's a lot of new opportunities out there for lighting companies, as well as a lot of expired provisions that kind of made their way back. So
Hang on one second.
Sure.
What's your designation, Dan?
So I am a senior engineer with Energy Tax Savers. We've been around since about 2005. Our company was started, you know, we're kind of a mix of engineers and accountants at this company, but we were started because there was some great tax incentives out there for the lighting industry and other energy industries, and there wasn't much of a bridge between the technical side and the tax side, and, you know, we saw an opportunity there. And since then, we've done about 15,000 buildings, helping them get tax incentives for lighting upgrades, other energy upgrades. So, you know, there's a number of tax incentives out there. And, you know, we think it helps to have a firm like ours out there, you know, helping people kind of bridge that gap there.
So you can get an engineering degree in tax savings?
So it certainly helps with the benefits that we're going to be talking about.
Okay. So tell us what the average lighting distributor who's working in the energy efficiency field needs to know right now.
Sure. So there's a number of opportunities out there. One being, a lot of the lighting industry is familiar with an incentive that's been around since about 2006 called EPACT 179D. And this is something that allows building owners or designers of government buildings to get a tax incentive of up to $1.80 per square foot, not only for their interior lighting, but also for HVAC upgrades and building envelope upgrades, like upgrading a roof or a window. So it's based off of overall building energy efficiency, but the lighting industry really grabbed onto this benefit, probably better than most other industries out there, because, you know, I think they had a hand in writing the actual law, more so than those other industries. They had a nice special section for interior lighting where, you know, normally to capture this benefit, an entire building simulation model needs to be created. But the lighting industry has a method in there where, you know, you just look at the overall building wattage, and if you show some energy efficiency savings there, you can be eligible for that tax benefit. Essentially, lighting, there's an easier way to qualify for this credit, tax deduction. So this benefit had been around since 2006, and it was just recently extended again last month as part of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, which was that giant budget bill, but also included some tax extenders. But essentially right now, this is a retroactive benefit. Where it makes sense for lighting companies is anything that a commercial company has done since 2006 through the end of 2017, they can still take that benefit and put it on their current tax returns. So, you know, we work with a lot of lighting companies who, you know, knew about this benefit throughout 2017. You know, it not being available at the time, they were kind of cautious about actually including it on any proposals. But now that it's available, they have an excuse to reach out to some of their, you know, clients that they did work for and say, hey, you know, this lighting design that we gave you gives you a little more, you know, better payback right now. You can capture this tax benefit. You still get time to put it on your current tax returns.
Hang on one second.
Sure.
I'll jump in here. The first thing is, in courtesy to all our YouTube viewers that like to watch the thing on YouTube, can you hear that?
Yes.
Every time you touch your desk, your camera goes like this. So people watching it. So I know you're a passionate guy about tax incentives and you're really into it, but try not to hit that desk. Okay.
I see.
Because your camera's going. Yeah, there you go. There's another shot.
Just like that.
Yeah, exactly. So don't do that anymore. But the second thing is, so you're saying that companies can go back retroactively. So you're saying from 2006. So if they've done an upgrade in 2007, they can retroactively go back and claim this EPAC tax credit. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. And okay. The way we've seen companies use this benefit the best way is working with companies that have upgraded certain aspects of their building throughout the years. So say somebody put on a new roof back in 2007 and maybe put in new heaters in their warehouse in 2010. And just last year, somebody gave them a new nice LED upgrade. All of those projects together would probably combine to show the energy efficiency savings to trigger this maximum benefit. So it's really about looking at everything a company has done in that entire window and combining that with something that, you know, you just sold them or something that they're looking to do should this benefit get extended again.
Now, that dollar per square foot, did that amount change over time or has it always been $1.80?
I thought
it's always been $1.80 per square foot or capped at the cost of the project, whichever one is less.
So and this includes more than just lighting is what you're talking about. So in terms of lighting only, can a lighting only project qualify for $1.80 per square foot? It sounds like it can.
Yes. And it really depends on the type of building and how it uses energy. But to capture that full $1.80 per square foot, there needs to be a full energy simulation model being performed. And that's usually where our firm comes in. But essentially, if a building shows a 50% reduction in overall energy cost savings when modeled against an ASHRAE baseline building, you get that full dollar rating per square foot. So essentially the way this works with an energy simulation model is, you know, we take all of the aspects of the building that you did your project in. So we look at that lighting system, load that up into the model. We look at that HVAC system and all of those, you know, all of that equipment's loaded into the model. And then, you know, the same materials that the building's made out of, then we take an identical version of your building, but completely outfitted to ASHRAE reference equipment, and simulate the energy usage over the course of a year. And if your building shows a 50% reduction in energy costs compared to that ASHRAE building, you get that maximum benefit. Now, certain types of buildings, when you simulate it, it's really driven by the interior lighting. So your warehouse buildings, your manufacturing buildings, really the all of the energy usage in the model is going towards the lighting. So, you know, putting in modern technologies, you know, LEDs, maybe highly efficient fluorescence, you'd probably be able to trigger that full dollar 80 per square foot just off of a lighting project alone.
But you need it to be 50% reduction of the complete energy bill for the facility.
When compared to the ASHRAE reference building. So it doesn't care about...
The ASHRAE reference building, does it have... What kind of lighting does the ASHRAE reference building have?
So T12? Depending on...
T12 fluorescence?
It's more or less... So it's based off... Right now, the benefit's based off of an ASHRAE 2007 standard. And really, the technology that was being pushed then was, yeah, efficient fluorescent lighting. Like your T8s, maybe T12s.
And it's still the same standard.
Yes, and it's still based off of the ASHRAE 2007 standard.
Can you stack 11-year-old
that? Standard.
If you've already applied once for your T8 upgrade, can you apply again for your LED upgrade?
So as of now, it's a you're eligible for $1.80 per square foot over the benefits lifetime. So there hasn't been any sort of refresh. Hopefully, if this does get extended, you know, they'll include some sort of reset. So like you're saying, people who upgraded their T8s, I mean, people who upgraded, say, old metal halides to T8s, took the benefit and then upgraded to LEDs, so they would be able to take the benefit again. But as of now, you can't do that.
Why is that, I wonder? I mean, if it's been 10 years between conversions, it says it's a one-time deal.
So, yeah, it's just the way the benefit was written, up to $1.80 per square foot, and then it's been expired and extended about five times since it was passed, and every time it's just been a lazy, you know, cross out this end date and put this end date. There hasn't really been any fixes to the benefit, which there's plenty out there. That,
now, you know, let's say you just did a lighting retrofit, and that lighting retrofit saved your total energy facility by 30%. What does that give you then? Or what can that give you up to? Is it proportionate to that $1.80, or how does it work?
So, it's not about where your building was before the project. It's how it performs against the ASHRAE standard. So it is standardized, but if you're not at that 50% reduction in energy costs, there's different targets to hit depending on what you're including in the model. But essentially it works out, you know, 25%, 40%, 50%, depending on what's being in the model. But if you're not at that $1.80, you're at $1.20 or 60 cents per square foot is the tax benefit.
Does this work for the U.S. taxpayer?
Yeah, so as long as...
Taxpayer?
Yeah, so as long as they're paying U.S. taxes, they're going to have an interest in this. And the way it works is...
That wasn't my question. That wasn't my question. My question is, like, there are schemes that are perverse. Is this a good scheme or a bad scheme?
So the government doesn't actually lose money on this for a commercial building. Essentially, the way the benefit works is it's a timing difference. So normally when somebody buys lighting equipment, it's considered 39-year property, meaning already without any tax incentives, somebody is taking of the cost of that project, 1/39th of the cost as a tax deduction every year for 39 years.
So depreciation thing.
Exactly, just depreciation. So
you accelerate the depreciation.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Whatever you're taking as this benefit, you're subtracting from your normal depreciation. So essentially everything's netted out, but you know, there is a benefit to the taxpayer because, you know, it's a timing difference. There's a concept called the net present value of money. You know, a dollar today is worth more to you than a dollar 40 years from now. So that's really where the benefit is going to be for you know, commercial clients on this.
So it's essentially defer, defer, defer.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Greg, you have any more on the EPAC thing?
So the I know I've played around with this a little bit in the years since it started. I started in about 2006 in lighting, so I was familiar with it, and I've tried messing around with it, but I'm always confused by it. So I just want to clarify a few things. In just looking at the lighting, first of all, you need to make sure they own the building to get the tax deduction. Obviously,
or the building owner gets the tax deduction.
The building owner or the owner of the equipment. So if it's a tenant and they're the ones buying the lighting, they'd be able to take the benefit.
That is the case. I thought at one point it had to be the owner of the actual facility, but if you own the equipment, you can get this deduction.
As long as it's
hang on. If the equipment is affixed to real property, then it's owned by the building owner by definition, is it not?
It's all about, again, when it's being tied to the depreciation like that, it's all about whoever's books the equipment is on. So if the tenant purchases it, puts it on their books, it's their benefit.
Yeah,
the building owner.
Greg, the average tenant that changes their lights, those lights are owned by the owner. They can't take out the owner's lights, put in new lights, and then own those lights. They have to belong to the building owner.
We've seen it work either way, but for the most part, we would say, yeah, the building owners are the ones paying for these projects.
No, I would say the other way around.
I would say the other way around as well.
I would say more than likely, it's the tenant that pays for the project because they get all the energy savings, and the owner doesn't care because he doesn't pay the energy bill. So what I think the lesson for the average lighting distributor is to say, look, let me get your landlord on the line and say, okay, there's going to be $1.80 a square foot. So if you have a 10,000 square foot building, that would be $18,000. If you hit the top ratio,
exactly, $18,000 tax deduction.
So you tell the owner to say, hey, you got to work it in to split it with their tenant. But in terms of a fixation to real property, I'm a Canadian, Dan. But I mean, the laws, the tort laws, are pretty much the property laws are basically the same. If you screw something to a building, it's owned by the person that owns the building generally, especially if you've taken out what they own. So I would say you got to bring in the landlord, and they never pay. Greg, do they pay for your projects? They almost never pay for our projects.
Never. It's almost always a tenant, at least in lighting, is what I've seen.
Yeah, unless they're renewing their lease or something like that, and it comes up.
Correct.
Almost never.
That's one area that I've always been confused about, and maybe still am. the other thing is there's other stipulations, I thought, with lighting where you have to install controls on them, or you have to have bi-level switching. Is that still something you have to do?
So if you recall, I mentioned there's a special section for lighting only upgrades where the lighting industry got their way on that. So if you're not performing the building energy model and you're just looking at a 60 cent per square foot lighting only benefit, it's
That's
called the prescriptive method.
Confused.
Okay. Yes, it's called the prescriptive method, the interim lighting rules, and that just looks at the watts per square foot of a space and compares that to the ASHRAE reference watts per square foot of a space. So adding up all the light fixtures in the space, dividing by the square feet, comparing that to the ASHRAE baseline. And depending on your efficiency there, you're eligible for somewhere between 30 and 60 cents per square foot. But to use that method, certain spaces would need to meet what's called the bi-level switching requirement. And that just means that a space needs to have one more light level other than every fixture on and every fixture off in a space. So, you know, if you had different switches controlling different fixtures or dimmers in the space or daylighting that, you know, dims the fixtures, you know, those types of things would let you pass that requirement. And there's also a number of types of spaces that don't need to meet this requirement. So, you know, most common areas like restrooms, corridors, storage areas, so your warehouses, hotel guest rooms, parking garages, none of those, all of those are exempt from that requirement. So what really
what
ends
is
up
not exempt?
So really what gets cut out is your small single occupant offices. Most office type space is, not exempt from this. Classrooms, that sort of stuff.
But I've heard it as simple, Mike, for your purposes. If you have a warehouse with 30 light fixtures, and if there's two switches in there, one turns on 15, the other turns the other 15 on, that technically qualifies.
That would
Is that
qualify.
correct?
Yeah, if it's just controlling a single fixture and the other one controls the 29, that would still
So
qualify
let
as
me
well.
ask you, what is the purpose of this dual switching law? What is that about, or dual switching requirement? What's the purpose of that?
It I
I
wouldn't
know,
say
Greg, I
that it
just want the
actually
money for my client. Shut up, call again. I just want the money. But what's the purpose of that? It sounds like a stupid idea.
it in practice, I wouldn't think it saves any money. Thinking about the way somebody enters a room, they just hit all the light switches that are there. I think it was included mostly because the lighting industry had this special way of calculating it, and this made it a little tougher to qualify. That's really what I think the purpose behind that was. But
I think
in
it might
terms
have
of
been energy saving related. They're saying now you have two switches, you can turn off half the lights. That's not technically the case if 29 can go on one switch and one can go on the other. I think that's what
Exactly.
their reasoning behind it is, but it's kind of flawed logic, as we can all tell.
I think the government should hire the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast hosts to design their
Figure this
laws,
out.
perhaps, possibly. But anyway, okay.
So
So
this $1.80 and the 60 cent, that's where I'm confused, because I'm always under the impression of the 60 cents a square foot because I focus just on lighting. So if you're just doing lighting, you can still get a $1.80, or you can get the 60 cent, or you can get a combo, or how does that work?
It's one or the other, and in our experience, the lighting industry really grasped onto that 60 cent per square foot method, but have left a lot of money on the table in regards to that full dollar 80. Again, I would suspect your favorite types of projects are those big industrial buildings where changing out a bunch of high bay, low bay fixtures. Those are the types of projects that most commonly, just doing that lighting retrofit are going to trigger that full dollar 80 per square foot benefit. But, really a way to think about it is that anytime a project is done in a building, whether it's the lighting, whether it's the HVAC, whether it's the envelope, what this benefit does is it takes a snapshot of the building, the way the entire building uses energy, and that's what you're going to be comparing it against. So, a lighting project is enough to trigger that full benefit, especially in those buildings and other types of buildings, like your more AC driven buildings, like schools, office buildings. You would be able to kind of take advantage of any existing efficiencies in that HVAC system. So, if you're doing a lighting project in a building that has an efficient HVAC system, there's probably a higher chance you're going to be closer to that dollar 80. So, really, the way this benefit works, you look at the building holistically, but if you're not at those targets, you can choose to just carve out that lighting and just go for that 60 cent per square foot
I know
tax
you're
benefit.
passionate, Dan, but don't hit that desk, brother.
Sure.
Okay, so Greg, can you have you stacked these before on top of the utility rebates before?
I've never put it, it's been a part of our proposal in the past where I said you can qualify up to 60 cents a square foot, which in this case you do the math and you figure out the square footage. But I've always, I was under the impression that it needed to be the building owner that did. And a lot of times we're not dealing with the building owner, but now that might have changed. So, no, I haven't done that. I know people have do that and put that as part of the payback. But I think it all depends. And I've always owned, so you need to own the building or own the fixtures. You need to pay tax, which some people don't. So you got to keep those in mind. And then you have to cut the energy by expert, or you have to meet the ASHRAE standards of watts per square foot or 50% in the $1.80 game. So basically what it comes down to is we should say you can do this, talk to your accountant and talk to someone like you that can run all this for them.
A
Because
tax
that's tough
engineer.
for
More or
us
less.
to kind of figure out. Yeah.
Yeah, more or less. And in our experience, accountants probably aren't too familiar with this benefit. There is a big technical side to this. And yeah, we're glad to work with any company.
How many dollars per square foot? Yeah. I get it. We're gonna put your website up on the podcast and all that kind of stuff, Dan. Don't worry about that.
Okay? Sure.
So you might like we got 1,000 listeners in 4 days. So don't worry about it. There's gonna be a lot of people that are listening to this. But honestly, what's your cost per square foot, Dan?
So it's really based on building type, the measures that we're processing, the size of the building. But we do make sure our fee is never more than 15% of the federal tax savings.
So if it's $18,000, you're getting $2,000, $3,000.
No. So since this is a tax deduction, it's not actually dollar for dollar, you know, the actual value that a customer is getting. You got to multiply that by a tax rate to get the actual value. So, you know, we assume a 35% tax rate, you know, federal tax rate for, through 2017, and our fee would never exceed 15% of that. So take the deduction
of the 35.
Correct. So take the deduction, multiply by 35%, multiply by 15%. That is our maximum fee. But, depending on the type of building, buildings over a certain size, especially, it would be ridiculous to charge that much. So it comes in less. But that's really our gauge that we go against.
So how would you recommend a distributor like myself that has sold hundreds of thousands of projects in the last 10 years and you want to go back and look at some of these? What's the right steps to take?
Come on, buddy.
Hundreds of thousands, not like 100,000, but hundreds to thousands. You know what I mean?
How about millions? So,
probably project, not the right
millions
term.
Of dollars. Oh, maybe millions. Projects. Okay. Come on, Grant.
Dollars,
don't be
sure.
Humble, man.
Dollars.
So we'd suggest looking at your millions of projects and picking out a few that are maybe some of the biggest, some of the largest in size, because this benefit is driven by square footage. So, the larger the building, the larger the benefit. So that's really going to be the biggest bang for the buck there. Anything that, again, this benefit was just extended a month ago. So it is kind of a, hot item. You can, go back. This just happened. Anything you did last year is now eligible. So, prioritizing your most recent, prioritizing your biggest projects. The best types of buildings for this, especially from the lighting perspective, are your manufacturing buildings, your warehouse buildings. Easiest to trigger that maximum benefit. Also, usually pretty large buildings to begin with. So, it's kind of looking at what you've done recently and seeing where the best opportunities are.
So let's say maybe in 2010, I did a high bay retrofit to a high bay fluorescent. Now I'm trying to go back to them and sell them LED. Maybe we take the deduction from the fluorescent to help fund some of the LED project.
Exactly. Yes.
Nice way to look at it. Okay.
That has been probably one of the most successful ways to use this benefit, using past projects to help pay for current projects. Like you're saying, something that was done then triggers a benefit. They can free up some money, pay for something now.
What if the company's expensed that lighting already and they haven't depreciated it?
So if that has been expensed, then you can't apply this benefit towards that. But if they've done any other building upgrades in that time period, like put on a new roof, did some new windows, got some new HVAC units for a section of the building, those are eligible costs that probably wouldn't have been expensed.
See, Greg, I'm going to think there's a lot of lighting distributors, like you engage somebody on some high bay retrofits. And I'm thinking that they expense those light fixtures. They didn't make a capital investment and write them off over 39 years, you said, 40 years?
Dan? Yeah. Yes.
I'm thinking most of them just wrote it off in the same year that they bought them. So they've already accelerated that depreciation forward as it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, we're seeing more and more of.
And not only that though, but I think most of the clients, if you went to your client, Craig, and you said, hey, remember that project we did 8 years ago? Yeah. How did you account for that? Huh?
I don't know. Right.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. So
me accounting. Huh?
Call me yeah, Dan, what do you recommend? How do you recommend we do that? Say, we can't just for free, you guys analyze that, or someone like you would analyze that, or how does that work?
Yes. So us and maybe other companies would also probably, we review anything on a complimentary basis. So if, we found people don't like to pay us to find out there's no benefit. So we'll review anything, make sure that, you know, there is a benefit and what we think that benefit would be and how much it would cost to, you know, fully process this benefit. So, you know, we're glad to explore any, you know, potential benefit.
Let me ask you
there.
Something here, Dan, though. Let me ask you, I'm an interrupter, by the way. So if they've already expensed the light fixtures as without depreciating them, they do not qualify for the EPAC.
Correct. The benefit could not be applied towards that cost.
Because they've already accelerated that benefit.
Correct. There's nothing to pull from. Right.
So the best thing to do is to expense your light fixtures in the year you bought them, if you can.
If you can, that would probably be beneficial there. If you've done other upgrades, this
benefit could be applied against them. It's already a tax deduction. You've already deducted the entire tax deduction.
Exactly. There would be nothing available.
Right. Okay. So let me change gears here for a second, because I'm going to say, because this is to benefit lighting distributors, and I think the vast majority of lighting projects, unless they're done by the owners who have to depreciate, tenants wouldn't be able to expense more easily. Okay. What do you know about the Trump tax deductions that are going through?
So there were some changes with that do make it better for building owners, actually. A couple of things happened over the past couple of years that essentially allows companies to write off their lighting retrofits. So a few years ago, there was something called the PATH Act was passed, which was some tax extenders. It extended this EPACT benefit a couple of years ago. Also had some other tax changes as well. One of them was the creation of something called qualified improvement property. And, you know, put really simply, it's a way of categorizing certain expenditures in a building. Now, lighting retrofits are something that would fall into that category. Now, also, with this big tax reform bill in December, there was made a bonus depreciation was set at 100%. Now, bonus depreciation allows companies to write off a percentage of the cost of something related to their business as a, you know, immediate tax deduction, and then depreciate the rest of it. And it's been at different percentages over the years, but as part of tax reform, it was made to 100% for the next 4 years or so through 2022, and then it starts to ramp down a little bit. But essentially anything that is qualified improvement property is eligible for bonus depreciation. So companies can, in 2018, if they're doing lighting retrofits, you know, consider that qualified improvement property, be eligible for 100% bonus depreciation, and write it off completely. Tenants also can do this. It's, you know, similar to what you were talking about before, but, you know, tenant improvements would fall into this category. They can write off these lighting retrofits. Now, keep in mind, this is only for retrofits. If it's new construction lighting, then it's outside of the scope of this.
Is there a deduction for new construction?
Not really. It would just be the normal depreciation.
Okay. And
so how does that go ahead, Greg, if you got something like
I was just going to ask, and this is probably building envelope and not really lighting related, but there are solar tax deductions as well, I assume.
Yeah, the solar tax credit is still around, and I think it's around through 2024 or so, at 30%, and then
that's
it starts
a separate
to ramp
deal.
Down. Completely separate, yeah.
Okay.
That just touches the solar equipment and anything that helps generate the solar.
Got it.
Okay, so when my bean counter starts talking, I listen for the first two or three sentences, and then eventually I start going, what's your fee again? Right? What's your fee
yes.
again? How much am I getting back? What's your fee again? How much am I getting back? Right. So the EPAC versus the additional Trump tax deduction or something on top of that. Just summarize that for me again, because I didn't totally catch the difference between the two. You said it was
so,
an accelerated depreciation. It sounded the same as the EPAC to me.
Yeah. So with this new tax scheme for 2018, it's essentially the EPACT benefit would be a little less beneficial for commercial building owners because there wouldn't be a benefit to going pursuing this EPACT benefit if they're already going to be expensing it. But, you know, again, applying it towards other building upgrades that you can't include in your qualified improvement property and, you know, bonus depreciation there, that is the opportunity if it does get extended. But yeah, essentially the outcome is the same, but the method for getting there is different. You know, the EPACT benefit's completely based off of energy savings, the qualified improvement property, bonus depreciation, new method is just based off of whatever type of equipment it is. So if it falls into that category and a lighting retrofit does, you can take that benefit.
So qualified improvement property, bonus depreciation, that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
So it essentially what you're saying is if you can expense your lighting retrofit, you're better off. If you can't, you should turn to the Trump taxed qualified improvement program bonus depreciation. And if you can't get that, you go back to EPAC?
No, that is, if you can, if it's a lighting retrofit, you're going to want to do that qualified improvement property bonus, taking the bonus depreciation on it, essentially. If this EPAC benefit does get extended, you know, it would be beneficial for, you know, new construction, projects that are being done in conjunction with the lighting, like HVAC upgrades. But, you know, as of now, the EPACT 179D isn't available for 2018. So, you know, right now, that is the only option to write off stuff.
This when do you expect to find out? When do you expect to find out if 179D is coming back?
We're honestly not too optimistic. However, yesterday, this Congress did have a hearing about a number of different tax incentives, and this being one of them, to see, you know, what makes sense to extend going forward, either for 2018 or maybe even permanently. And, you know, it generally sounded positive, you know, listening in on it, you know, what people thought about this EPAC benefit. So, you know, we'll see where things go. The point was made that it doesn't do anybody any good if it's a retroactive incentive. It doesn't help anybody sell any new lighting or any other energy equipment if it's, you know, tacked on 2 months after the year ends. So, you know, we'll see how things develop on that.
Now, there's another program, and I don't know if you get real involved in this, but lighting distributors can take advantage of that are for educational or government facilities, where the lighting distributor or the lighting specifier can actually take the deduction. Can you explain that, or do you not really get involved in that?
No, so that is probably the most popular part of the CPAC benefit, and it's probably where we do most of our work. This EPAC 179D benefit, if it's a commercial building, the benefit goes to the economic owner of the equipment. If it's a government building, it goes to whoever designed that project. So, you know, if it's a lighting retrofit, it's pretty much whoever's specifying that lighting equipment, whoever's creating the technical specifications there. So, you know, it's...
The land of the free and the home of the lobbyist, buddy. The land of the free and the home of the lobbyist. Oh my god, that is so gross, dude. Oh man, how did that get through?
Explain that to us a little more.
Come on.
So the intent there was, you know, back in 2005.
No, the intent was to help all these guys that got their hands in the pig pork pockets of Washington and Minneapolis or whatever the state capitals are, to grab as much money back from the people as possible. Come on, man. That's so gross, dude. That's gross, man.
We were doing a lighting podcast, not political commentary.
I know, but it's not political. It goes on both. I'm Canadian. I'm apolitical, bro. I can't believe that went through. That's crazy.
Tell us about it, Dan. So
I would happily take advantage of it. If I was operating in an American state, I would happily get as many tax deductions as I could. But I mean, that just sounds like a pork scheme if I've ever heard one, bro. Come on, man. But yeah, go on. Tell us all about
the intent.
How we bring back the pork. Come on, man.
The intent was, you know, when this law was being written, you know, this was part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005. And that's something that set aggressive government energy efficiency targets for government buildings. So this was thought of as a way to help get that done. So giving the designer of a project a reason to be more energy efficient on a project, to do things that they wouldn't have normally maybe considered in a building when looking at payback and stuff. You know, at the time, LEDs were prohibitively expensive. It was really to encourage energy efficiency in these government buildings. You know, they obviously couldn't give a tax break to the government, so, you know, they gave it to the designers thinking that, you know, they would be incentivized to do, you know, a better job in terms of energy efficiency. But, you know, the way we've seen it work best is that it's used in a way to essentially, you know, either reduce the cost, you know, of the project. They can probably give a more competitive bid on something that's a little more energy efficient to the government. So, you know, it has been a popular part of this benefit, and it's available for any member of the design team, you know, whether it's an architect, an engineer, an ESCO, you know, lighting specifier.
They get an extra benefit for doing their job. Sorry, but I think we just lost 50% of our subscribers, Greg. But I, you know, so that's still available if you're designing, and trust me, all our listeners out there, I would take advantage of it too. If it was out there, you do it. But so that doesn't benefit the government building at all, that tax break.
It gives them a more efficient building. It theoretically should have given them.
That's a tendering process. Sorry, right. Greg is giving me a signal to calm down on this one, but I just
no. Saying it gives them more efficient.
Oh, that's okay, what I meant. more efficient building. You know, right. I think most nail distributors would do the same job anyway. Don't you think, Greg?
Yeah, no, I think they do, but a lot of them have taken advantage of it, and some of them build it into the proposal. You know, saying we're going to deduct this much of the project cost because we know we're going to get that tax deduction if we get the order, and they factor that in. So does that deduction have to take place the year of the project?
Yeah, it would go on the tax return of the year of the project's completion.
So you can't retroactively go back to any?
No, for that, you're limited to whatever an open tax year would be. So here in 2018, there's a three-year window for amending your tax returns if you've never taken this. So 2018, 3 years ago, people would have been filing their 2014 tax returns. So if you've never taken this, there's 2014, 15, 16, and 17 available.
Get that. Get a grip on letting listeners. Get a grip on letting listeners. Go back. Call your bean counter. Call Dan Audette if you've done any government buildings. So, but they have to declare corporate profits in order to get this.
Yeah, you have to owe tax to be able to monetize it. But if you're not paying tax,
can it go on the personal tax returns? Can it be extended from the corporation? So, if Premier Lighting, perhaps in Minneapolis, you know, had billed somebody, and they had taken, you know, all the money out of the corporation personally, can they extend that to the owners of the business?
Yeah, so it flows through to the shareholders of the business, exactly.
Whoa, Gregor. That sounds real.
So you can go back.
That's going into the introduction of this show.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So you're saying that somebody filing a personal tax return that's a lighting distributor that may have done a upgrade where the shareholders had pulled out all the money out of the corporation can then extend that tax return from the corporation to the shareholders?
An S corp where there's partners in the companies, it flows down to theirs. But a C corp, you know, they'd have to if they can't use it in the year, they'd have to carry it forward to the next year.
So it's got to be a partnership for this year. A C corp could carry it forward to the next year.
Up to 20 years, actually.
Wow. Okay. So it goes both ways. They can carry it forward either way.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exciting.
And what do you have to, how does it qualify? Is it X watts per square foot kind of thing again? Is it similar to the lighting deduction?
It's the exact same benefit. It's just yep. who gets it.
60 cents a square foot.
Or up to $1.80 per square foot.
And it's only on government and public education, like public school.
All government buildings. So whether it's federal buildings like military bases or state universities or your local K through 12 schools, municipal buildings, all branches of government. It just has to be government owned building.
So Dan, you know, Greg just put out an ad on Indeed.com for someone to scour all of his invoices for the last 3 years. Yeah. You know, he's super rich, by the way. Greg Garrett. He's a lighting superstar.
Well, yeah. Oh, he's doing billions of projects. So.
Yeah, billions. Billions.
Yeah, now it's billions. Right.
From thousands to 100,000, millions, billions.
Billions.
So that's exciting news, man. I mean, honestly, I mean, I made fun of it a little bit, Dan. I made fun of it, but we all have tax quirks. We have to, as businesses, we have to take advantage of what's out there because we pay so many taxes at the end of the day. It's the same in, I think, all Western countries. The people that are successful have a huge tax burden. And it's incumbent. People complain about the size of the taxes and the code. And the IRS tax code is this and whatever. You should see the IES lighting books. They're worse, aren't they, Gregor?
Yeah, thick.
It's like thick like this, right? So, I mean, it's incumbent upon us to take advantage of those opportunities as they come along. Greg, and go
really,
ahead, Dan.
Greg did make a great point. You know, the people that have been using this for a while have really started to incorporate this into their process really billing it into their projects, planning for it. So, you know, it does make it more competitive. It does give the government a better price and a better product, theoretically.
I think if you're losing proposals on a regular basis, so, you know, if you're a lighting distributor and you're like, you consistently bid these government projects, school boards, universities, whatever, and you're losing them on a regular basis, you think, why, how did I lose that? Whatever. I think it's a good thing to look at that maybe you're not really fully looking at the scope of what that deal entails, and that other more savvy lighting guys are just kicking your butt. They're charging more for the light bulbs and the ballasts and the fixtures, and they're just incorporating this tax deduction into the formula. Would that be it, Greg, on your side? I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think there is some legitimacy to that. And Dan, is that something you work with distributors now? If they say, hey, I'm bidding this project, can you help me put the best bid forward?
We work with a number of different lighting companies that are, you know, trying to incorporate some sort of tax incentives into their projects, helping them navigate that and, you know, bidding these benefits into, you know, the payback there. You know, we've been doing... That's kind of the way our company went to market, by, you know, really grabbing onto the lighting industry and helping them, you know, incorporate this into their process. And, you know, early on, we worked with a distributor out of Kansas who really grasped this benefit early on, earlier than most. And, you know, he was bringing this to his commercial clients, and he was so successful at it that he put the local Phillips distributor out of business.
I bet.
So, you know, it's... If
we don't want to put anyone out of business, but we want to be more competitive for sure. Right. But go ahead, Dan, finish your point.
Yeah. If you're not using this benefit, you know, there's a potential that somebody else bidding the job is.
For sure.
I just want to say quick, Mike, to me, the reason I haven't always used it is because I feel like there's too many assumptions. Do you think that's a bad feeling? Do you think I should say, hey, who cares about assumptions? Assume they will get this tax credit.
I mean, the moving parts are, is the building going to qualify, and can the company monetize a tax incentive? So, you know, depending on what data points you're collecting, you know, you'd be able to speak easily to whether the building's going to qualify. And it really all just comes down to the company's tax situation. So if there's a dialogue between whoever's planning that project and whoever's aware of the company's tax situation, you know, then you'd be able to be a little more confident in this. If not, then, you know, you are kind of giving them something theoretical.
You know who's got a handle on this for sure? Greg? Randy in Wisconsin.
It does. That's a big
for
part of
sure,
business.
Dude.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure. He's got a whole thing in his software program that kicks this thing up. Let me ask you something else. Yep. In terms of ESCOs, Dan, and in terms of financing these kind of projects, can the company not pay in full at the point when the project's completed, pay for it using a finance company of some kind, move all the depreciation forward, and then, you know, pay for it over time using financing?
So I'm not sure if I understand this completely. So if, again, it's depending
on
project
costs, $100,000 project costs $100,000. Okay.
Sure.
Say energy savings is $30,000 a year and there's a utility rebate of $30,000. Okay. So the net cost is $70,000. Say they finance that at 8% interest or 10% interest over 5 years. And so they're paying X amount of dollars a month over 5 years. Can they move, and then a finance company comes in and pays the $100,000? Number one, can the property owner or whoever claim the $1.80 a square foot or the 60 cents a square foot prescriptive or whatever it is? And two, can the owner of the business, that's, or the government thing, can they move that tax deduction to the distributor or to the owner of the business?
So again, it's all dependent on whose books it on, whose books the project's on, and when it's appearing on that, on their books. So if the finance company is retaining ownership of this equipment, then technically it would be their benefit. But if there is some sort of sale, that if they are transferring ownership eventually, then there would be some sort of recapture where it just doesn't make sense for them to take this. So again, depending on who owns the equipment, whose books it's on, and when that those dollars are appearing on the books, that's really what's determining who's taking this benefit.
Greg, for sure those ESCOs are owning the equipment and taking the tax advantage over the course of the financing, over the 10-year financing, for sure. Would you say that?
So, I would say for sure. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think, Dan, I just want to clarify too, for the specifier to take on the tax deduction, you need the end user to sign a form saying that it's okay that they take that on. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. For government
buildings,
so they
roll that into their proposal.
Is that an IRS form like 198-2D or something like that?
There's no form, but the IRS does list the requirements that need to be on a form. And it's pretty standard stuff, you know, the address of the building, when the project was completed. It's essentially just an acknowledgement that a company was considered a designer on this project and that they're the ones taking the benefit. And the whole point is to prevent any sort of double dipping on these benefits, you know, that you don't get one company asking for it and another company taking it. So, yeah.
There's a lot of nail guys missing the boat on this. I'm telling you, Randy,
oh, for sure,
you're coming on the show and you're going to tell us how you're doing this, bro. So, okay, Greg, you got any more, anything else for Dan?
I don't know. That's a good overview.
Okay. All right, Dan. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, sure. Thanks
for
having me.
Listeners, why don't you plug your website? Go ahead and tell us what
your
website
is. Sure. So, energytaxsavers.com. We have a number of articles on how this benefit works for a range of different buildings. You know, if you wanted to send us anything, we look at anything on a complimentary basis. If you were interested in trying to get some tax savings for one of your projects, and you know, feel free to reach out and, you know, take our complimentary review.
So that's energytaxsavers.com.
Energytaxsavers.com.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on the show, Dan.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Bye for now.
Thanks.
It's getting hot in here, watchers of YouTube. That's right. Get a Grip on Lighting is available on YouTube now. If you'd like to watch it, do it, man. Go to YouTube, type in Get a Grip on Lighting. Go to the Get a Grip on Lighting website. Press play on the video screen and you can watch it, man. Lots of people are doing it. I think we got like 600 or 700 watches or views or whatever the hell you call it. So do it. And don't forget about my old friends at Keystone Technologies, KeystoneTechnetech.com. Blah, 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 blah. KeystoneTech.com, man. Go there. Check out their smart drive and direct drive compact LED replacements. Yeah, replace those CFLs. You got two ways to do it. How do you do it? Well, if your customer says, hey, I don't have a lot of money in the budget, I just need to get this place LED toot suite. That's French for you guys, means right away. Get this place done. Guess what? You go smart drive. You give them the right bulb, they slam it in there. Bob's your uncle. No electrical work. If the
The guy says, come on, man. I want to make this LED only. I don't want no ballast in there. I don't want to change any ballast, man, down the road. I want to fix this once and for all. You go direct drive. You take out the ballast. You take the line voltage. You put it in the socket. Then you put the LED bulb in. And you're done. You don't have to worry about anything else anymore. You don't have to worry about changing ballast down the road. Why do you do it? Why would you do this anyway? Well, with smart drive and direct drive, LED compact fluorescent lamp replacements, you get 50,000 hours life. That's a long time, man. That's more than four times the life of a CFL. You get more than 50% energy savings. Better light distribution if you're smart enough to choose the right one from the website. Or you could always call up Keystone. Call them up. Say, hey, man, this is what I'm after. This is what I'm doing. They're there to help you, man. Keystone's got some of the best customer service in the business. Go to KeystoneTech.com. KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. And who else? We can't forget about where it all started. These kind of podcasts that Greg and I do are really based on the kind of conversations we would have at the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors Convention. We decided to take those conversations and turn them into a podcast. And if you think that we talk the same way when we're being recorded and say the same things when we're being recorded, I don't think so, son. So come on. Join Nailed. Come down to the convention. Meet guys like Greg and I. There's guys at Nailed that are smarter than us. They're just not as cool. Huh? Go to nailed.org. N-A-I-L-D.org. For information on joining this association for educational products, come to the convention, man. There's so many people. They're going to be coming on the show. A lot of them are going to come on and tell their lighting story and talk about, you know, how they made their moves in this business. So that was episode 20. Dan Audette. Hey, Dan, thanks for coming on the show. Energy Tax Savers. He can help you out if you contact his company. Other than that, buddy, sayonara.